Those of you that have joined us on live stream are thankful and that you've joined us this day. I give to you now our brother and Adam. He's not a stranger to us, so I hope and pray that you give him your kind attention and see what the Lord has given to him to present to us this morning. Adam?
Daughter said just now. She said, I'm strange. I heard it. I heard it whispered from out there. Not stranger, but I'm strange. Well, good morning. I'm happy to be here this morning. And I have some thoughts I want to share today. You see my title here is The Role of the Master. And I have some thoughts. We're going to look at pretty good amount of pictures here today, and then I have some scriptures, some things for us to discuss. But we're looking at, today is another beautiful spring day, and probably a lot of you, your allergies are starting to get going because everything is blooming. And for, I guess it's probably been a couple years now, so it's probably time for me to preach another sermon about bees. So today is the time. I have a sermon, and I want to focus it around this thing that I'm really sillily passionate about bees. One of these things that I always try to do is I try to see the application of spiritual things in the things that I do every day. And so, you know, we come out of winter time, and when it gets to be winter time for a beekeeper, even though here in the Phoenix area it doesn't get incredibly cold, because it's going to cool down, bees don't like to move if it's colder than 55-ish degrees. So they're going to hang out in their hive. And so one of the jobs of a beekeeper is to reduce the size of their hive, right? Whether that's in taking some honey from them. Of course, you don't want to take too much because they need that to eat, right, and keep themselves warm and everything during the winter. But you reduce the size of their hives, the boxes, right, we call them supers, and reduce them down lower so that they have during the wintertime less area to heat, less area to stay warm. Bees, if you remember this last time I talked about this, they keep the inside of their hive at 93 degrees at all times. So if it's 110 outside, they're keeping it at 93 degrees. If it's negative 10 outside, they're keeping it at 93 degrees. You can imagine doing either one of those takes an awful lot of energy. So consequently, a lot of times during winter is when you're going to lose hives. They're going to starve to death. They're going to die. Disease can come in and all that. This last year, I went into the winter with 13 hives. I came out with 11. One of them I knew going into it was probably not going to make it. The other one was kind of a surprise. But that's something that happens. And if you look nationally, beekeepers in general lose about 25 to 40% of their hives every year. That's what it is. So, and you're all like, oh well. It matters a lot. To me, it's something, you know, and we're going to talk about it through here because you guys know I'm a dork about this. But these stupid insects, I end up caring quite a bit about. So weather's changing, and now everything's getting ready to bloom. And so there's a role that I have as a beekeeper. And that is, in the last couple weeks, as it's starting to warm up, and I've been looking, you know, for us here in Arizona, we're looking for two things. The creosote to start blooming, and if you've looked, you see the creosote start blooming. We got the yellow blooms all over the creosote, and the bees go all over that. But what we're really looking for is the citrus. And all of you know, we're walking down the street now, and you smell it and everything. All of the citrus is starting to bloom. And that first flow of honey that everybody really enjoys is that citrus honey. And so you have to get your hives ready. You have to get them ready for several reasons. Because if, you know, like I said, all of my actual beehives, I reduce their size. So if I don't get in there and give them room to grow, as soon as everything starts blooming, they're going to go and collect it. And they're going to say, I'm out of room. I don't have any more room. We're going to swarm. And when they swarm, they're going to take most of their honey, and they're going to split their numbers, and it sets that hive back significantly, and I may not catch that swarm, right? So I may just lose half my bees. And there's a moderate cost, and my wife will say, there's a cost to every beehive, significant, moderate, I don't know. So So the last couple weeks, I've been going through and I've been checking all of my hives. And I've been doing some things, looking through them and preparing them, getting them ready for what's going on right now. I noticed just in the last 2 or 3 days, buds on these citrus trees started opening up. They were all putting them on there, but now the flowers are opening up. And so this is what I wanted to make sure that I was ready for. So I have quite a few hives. I was just taking pictures of some of them that are in my backyard. I have a couple more at Uncle Jim's place. But if you look, you see one of these things, especially if you're a tinkerer like I am, some of these boxes I build myself and I use various things. So if I have material left over after I do a cabinet remodel or something like that, I might build a hive out of some of that, just because it can be somewhat expensive. So that's why you got all sorts of different looks of them. And I think it's kind of cool too. Years ago, Andy and I cut on the sawmill a bunch of planks of pine and stacked them in my backyard. And I thought it'd be really cool to make a couple beehives out of that. So I joined them together and made some beehives. And they're pretty good. You see that, like, you know, on the one on your far left, maybe? Far left, you know, that middle one, you see I've got a bracket on it and all that. They end up, if you don't paint them really well, and even if you do, over time, they'll start to spread and stuff like that, you know, and so there'll be cracks in it that open up. And here in Arizona, especially in the desert, that's not such a bad thing, right? Because especially when it's super hot, you get some more ways for air to get in and then be able to move it. But I've got a handful of hives. I've got 5 of them in my backyard. And I've got some pictures of them here going down the line here. And the one on the far right, you see a little one right there. That's a small one. That's called a nucleus. They call it a nuke box. Typically, it's just one of those. You see I have 2 of them stacked there. Typically, it's just one of them. And so one of the things that you do is, if I have maybe a small swarm that I catch, I'll put them in that small box. It's less room for them to be concerned about, less room for them to heat or cool. It gives them room to grow. And I'm doing an experiment there, because one of these things, we use these big wide boxes, but bees really like kind of narrow areas. So I'm doing an experiment there, and I'm stacking multiples of these nucleus boxes on there. And I actually put a 3rd one on it yesterday. They seem to really like that. But anyway, so I'm just showing you these. I'm just showing you some of these hives that I have in my backyard. This one right here, this is kind of cool. This particular hive, I was on shift and we got a call for a swarm. We went to this lady's house and she had a big wine barrel, decorative wine barrel in the back of her, on her porch. And there was a swarm that landed in there. And my captain graciously volunteered me to take that because he's a beekeeper. And I didn't want to. And especially because a lot of times these swarms are Africanized. You really don't know what you're going to get. And you may get something that's pretty aggressive. And then I have to switch queens and all that. I talked about that a couple years ago when I did all that. But this hive has been just absolutely stellar. Super calm. I get into this hive all the time just as I'm standing right here. They don't bug me at all. They're very gentle. Just sounds strange for me to say this, but they're sweet bees. They just don't. You know, and I realize bees, like sometimes bees, I think Gordon says bees just go after him no matter what. I have bees come to me all the time too, and they don't ever sting me. They land on me. But you can see in one of these, this is the same hive, 2 different pictures. You see that one of them is pretty active. And as I go out to my anywhere where I've got bees, the first thing I'm doing is I'm looking at my hives, and this is what I hope to see. It's a pretty busy hive. It's a lot of activity. Throughout the day, they're going to come and go like that because a lot of the workers, you know, they're going to get up and get their coffee in the morning and get a little bite to eat. Then they're going to go out and gather their stuff, and they're all going to come back in. So around the same times, you're going to see these swings of a lot of bees coming and then a lot of bees going and a lot of bees coming and a lot of bees going. But in general, I want to see a hive that is looking, you know, like this a good portion of the day. So if you guys ever see me when I'm walking back and forth from church and like that, and I step over to the fence at Uncle Jim's house and I look over, this is what I'm looking for. I just look at my hives real quick and I'm just paying attention to how many bees are coming and going. And it gives me an idea kind of the general health of one of these beehives. So I've showed you kind of what I'm looking for. I've showed you a couple of them, and I took these pictures on kind of a colder day. But there's one hive that we're going to talk about today, and it's this hive. This hive got a beautiful, very calm Italian queen bee a year and a half ago. This hive was very productive. If you've gotten honey from me in the last 2 years, a good portion of it came from this hive. In fact, this hive was putting out honey so quick last spring that I would go in one day, take a bunch of the frames with honey out, clear them out, spin them out, stick them back in, and the very next week I'd have to take those same ones and do it again. We had 5 gallon buckets of honey, and this one was one of my most productive hives. And it went into the winter incredibly, and looked to me like it was in good shape. I left it with two boxes like this, full of bees, good amount of honey, and I really didn't have any concerns. But then the springtime comes, I'm going through and I'm checking every hive, go through every single hive, and I get to this hive. But before I got to it, you know, a couple mornings I'd step out or afternoons I'd step out and I'd look, and this hive wasn't acting right. It wasn't acting the way that I expected it to. I didn't see a lot of activity, which coming out of the winter is not necessarily unusual, but I didn't see a lot of bee activity or anything like that. And so in the course of me checking everything, I got into my hive. And I got some pictures here. You guys, it doesn't matter if I had zero bees on here or I had more than this. I thought you'd be like, that's a lot of bees. This is a pretty decent amount of bees. Right there in the picture that's got the most. You know, all of those frames, there's 10 frames in there, and they're all covered with bees. So right there in that one box alone is probably 10, 15,000 bees right there. It's a pretty strong amount. And then the box below it, it's got quite a bit, right? I took that second box over off of it, and you know, that's a lot of bees. This is a hive that's got a ton of bees in it. And so I was kind of perplexed at the fact that this hive wasn't acting the way that I thought it should. You look there on the left, and I've got a frame that's out, and you see there's bees all over that, and you look at that and you say, you know, especially to someone who doesn't do much with bees, you say, well, that doesn't look too bad. And yet, as soon as I pulled that the top off and I saw those bees and then I lifted up that frame, I thought, I've got problems here. I've got trouble. If you look at that frame, there's bees all over the place. Right in the middle, there's one big stupid drone bee just hanging out. And one of these things is this time of year, there should be a lot of drones. Drones are the males. And they are a sign of a good, healthy hive, a hive that is strong enough to send out males to go and reproduce and continue it on. And I should be seeing a pretty fair amount of drones in here, and yet I only saw a couple of them. And as I look at that frame, I see that I got bees all over it. They're kind of scattered around, but the frame didn't look the way that I expect it to. This is one of my other hives. This is this time of year. This is what I expect to see. On the left picture, you've got a bunch of pollen that's stuffed in there, and you got a couple different colors. You got oranges and yellows and all that. So you look at that orange, there's one of these weeds that you guys have been diligently chopping down that puts out a flower with some orange pollen on it, and these bees love it, right? And they bring it in, and that's kind of like that's bees' carbohydrates. That's them eating bread, right? And we all like bread. Bees like it too. And you see right in the middle, there's one of those bees that's got a bunch of pollen stuck on her leg. Looks like she's got big old fat pants on. So you got pollen there, and then farther to the left, you got some honey. Some of it is, you just see that there's a shine, there's liquid in those cells. That's nectar that they put in there, and it's not finished processing into honey yet. They've got to dry it. They've got to do some more stuff, and some of it's capped. And then the picture on the right, you see that there's quite a bit of bees on there. If you look, you can see there's one that's got a red dot on her back. That's one of my queens. But you see that there's these cells that have caps on them, and that's actually babies that are in there. And down near the bottom of that picture on the right, you can see there's some of them that are open, and you see some white in there. That's larvae. They haven't yet covered that up to let that bee continue to grow. These are very healthy bees, and this is what I was looking for and what all the rest of my hives look like except for this one that was super strong. That produced every one of you who's been eating my honey this last year. A good portion of it came from that hive. It went into the winter really strong, and yet when I checked it, it was weak. When I look a little further in that particular hive, the one that's not doing real well, this is what I see. And you look at this, and you probably don't, because you're not a beekeeper, you're not seeing any problems here, but I look at this and I think, I got big problems. We use smoke. I use a smoker, and everybody's seen that. And that, you know, you use a thing full of smoke, and you push that smoke into the hive. And what it does is it encourages bees. At least the thought process is they think that there's some sort of issue coming, a fire, whatever it is, and we may have to leave. So we're going to grab everything we can. We're going to get our most prized possessions and you know, our grand piano and all that stuff, so we can leave real quick. So they go and they start taking in their honey. That's when we smoke them, and they do that. And what it does is it focuses the hive on a job. And then it also does is when they fill their stomach with honey, they physically can't bend their rear end enough to sting you, right? So for me, that's a good thing. And so when you open a hive after you've smoked it, you see this. You see bees with their heads in there. But, you know, I didn't use smoke on this hive. And all these bees have their rear ends. You see a bunch of bee rear ends sticking out and all that. And that is indicative of a hive that is starving to death. They're down in there, and they are trying to lick and suck every little tiny bit of food out of the bottom of every one of those. You see in there that there's some of those cells that are open, and you can see little bee heads in there, right? And that's new bees that should be emerging, except they're dead. And this one you can kind of see a little bit better. I got that one frame that's on the left, and at the very bottom of it you see one little bee there, and she's got her tongue sticking out. It's a lot of work being born as a bee. Nobody helps you. You have to chew the cap off of that, and then you have to manage to get your legs up and pull yourself out and all that. And so one of the things is you go to a healthy hive, and you're going to see that where there's bees that are trying to come out of that cell, and they're coming out and they're working at it, and they'll stick their tongue out and all that. And these other bees that are there, these workers will go by and they'll feed them. You need some energy. And yet, we got bees here who are starving to death trying to be born. And so I got this one hive that was incredibly strong and productive that is in real, real big trouble. I got a couple. I'm almost done with pictures here. I got a handful more pictures. Hopefully you're not like, man, this is really dumb that he's sharing all this stuff. But, you know, in the past I talked to you about good hives and strong hives. And today we're going to talk about problems. This is kind of hard to see. But one of these things that I do when I get into all of my hives is I kind of take a look at the bees themselves. And depending on the health of the hive, you'll see various things with the actual bees themselves. And so right here on my glove, midway on my short thumb there, you see just the rear end of a bee right there. And I kept trying to take a good picture of her because she looks different. Now on the picture on the left, she's down near the base of the thumb right there. And that's a side view of her. And you can see all of her right there. And if you compare her to the one that's up on the top of my short thumb there, she looks like a stunted midget. She's about half the size of a normal bee. She was walking around very angry, very, very ticked off. And probably because she realized that she is not how she's supposed to be. And if I ever put her back in that hive, those other ones are going to kill her because she's useless to them. Sometimes when you go into these hives that are sick, you begin to see stuff like this. They don't have the nutrients they need, so they're not growing correctly. There's something that is wrong. There's a disease. There's an issue within that hive. And so when you begin seeing stuff like this, you know, that's why when I go out, and I know Cindy's seen me do it lots of times, where I'm out there and looking at my beehives, and I might be out there for hours, and I'm looking at each one, and I'm kind of taking a look at it. Bees, and I'm looking at kind of their overall health. And when I see stuff like this, I'm like, man, there is trouble here. That's not all. You look at this. This is one of the frames from that hive. And if you look at it, you're like, looks like a bunch of bees on there. But if you look at the right one, you see that all of those bees are oriented up and down. Most of them are. And if you got close, they're kind of laying on top of each other. Up and down, laying on top of each other. You see it in this one as well on the left. They're all kind of oriented on top of each other, and they're laying on top of each other. And they're just kind of sitting there. I was looking for the queen in there. Long, you know, kind of the queen that had been there, who was so good and everything. Somehow during the winter, she died. My assumption is that because this hive was running out of food, that some other rival hive somewhere went to war, and they all zoomed in and attacked this hive, went in, killed the queen. And I assume that because when I first opened up this hive, there was a bunch of dead bees on the bottom of it, lots of them. And that happens. It's very, bees are to each other, are very warlike. They're always checking out their competition, and if they see there's a weakness, they will go back to their hive and say, I think we can take them. And they just go and they just attack, and they'll go in, they'll kill the queen, they'll steal they'll plunder it, you know, take all of their honey, and sometimes they'll say, hey, this is a nice place, we'll live here. Or sometimes they go back to their hive then with all of their treasure. So there's no queen here, but I was going through all these because I'm looking for a queen, and I actually did find these bees were able to make another queen bee, but as I looked at her, she was too small. She obviously hadn't bred yet, and there's a very narrow window once a queen bee hatches, a very narrow window for her to fly out and mate with the drones and come back and be effective. And if outside of that window, it's a narrow window like a day, and if it doesn't happen in that window, that queen might come back, but she's not able to make eggs, and therefore the hive is going to die. And if they don't have the resources to create another queen, they're just going to wither away. And that's what's going on with this particular hive. I'm going to tell you a little bit here as we look at these pictures, as we're getting to the end of my pictures, and we're going to talk about some spiritual stuff. This is kind of a continuation of that last one where I said you got all these bees and they're kind of oriented up and down and they're laying on top of each other. And this is indicative of bees who are trying to stay somewhat dormant. During the winter, they'll do this and they'll all cluster together and they will lay like this all on top of each other. And of course, the ones who are on the inside will stay the warmest. And then as the ones on the outside get colder, well, they'll start shuffling in and they'll switch spaces and all that. But this is an evidence, this is of dormancy. They're trying not to use too much energy. And in this particular hive's case, it's because they don't have any food to continue. So they looked at it and they said, well, we don't have any food, but there's a lot of us, so what do we do? Well, we'll just go ahead and try to stay as dormant as possible and make whatever we have last as long as it can. And bees are incredibly intelligently dumb, and they don't realize that they're all just sitting there until they inevitably die. Their lifespan is 6 to 8 weeks. The ones who hatch and live during the winter live a little bit longer than that. So this is a hive that is in bad, bad shape. Was super strong, incredibly productive, went through some hard times and came out of it none the better, in fact, the worse. And it really, for me, it broke my heart when I started looking at this. I've got plans of how I'm going to fix this, and I'll show you that in a second. But when you have a hive that ends up being weak like this and all that, you open up for a lot of stuff to come in. This is one of the biggest issues, not the biggest, one of the biggest issues that beekeepers have. These nasty things are called wax moths. And they will come and they'll establish themselves in your hive, and they'll start by just hiding in nooks and crannies. And the bees do a pretty good job. When you have a healthy hive, these little they start out as these worms and they turn into the moth, and the moth then of course lays more eggs and they turn into worms. When they're very small, the bees do a pretty good job. They won't bite them, they won't eat them, they don't want to eat them. But you'll see, you open up a hive, and you'll see this as well if there's ants in there, that there'll be some of those bees, and when they see an ant or they see one of these, they go up to it and they buzz as loud as they can and they push it with their wings. And they're trying to push it out. And but you can imagine, again, everything takes energy. If you don't have any energy, then you see that disease ends up overtaking you. And these wax moths, they do what you see in that upper left corner. They do a bunch of silk and stuff in there, and they grow, and they cover. It's all that black you see in there is all their poop. It's gross. My chickens love to eat these when I find them, though. I pull them out and throw them to the chickens. They love them. But this will go through and destroy a hive. And this frame, you know, every one of those cells you see is an individual, imperfect, by the way, hexagon that's about a quarter inch or so tall. And they take a significant amount of energy to build. And one bee might only in its lifetime be able to build 100 of them, you know. And once these wax moths comes in, I typically cannot clean all that off and do anything to make bees want to use that frame again. They usually don't want to ever touch it again. So for me, it makes it difficult if this particular thing happens to begin using the equipment that I have and all that. I wonder, I'm hopefully as I'm going through all this, you are looking for, okay, how's Adam going to draw this into spiritual parallels? Because I'm getting there, but here's another issue that we get here, and it becomes especially apparent when you have a sick hive. And these little things you see on the back of this bee that's on the top left is called a varroa mite. And if you imagine a vampire, a tick that just attaches itself to the bee and just sucks it to death when it gets done. I know! When I see them, that's exactly how I feel too. It makes me mad. These destroy beehives throughout the world. There's very few places that varroa mites aren't. They don't have them in Hawaii yet. I don't think they're in Australia yet. Which is why a lot of queen bees and stuff you get, if you order them, these breeders are in Hawaii, because they can guarantee you that you're going to have a queen bee that doesn't have any of this stuff in her. But these varroa mites come in, and again, you'll see it. When you see a varroa mite wandering around a beehive, a lot of times you'll see bees in a healthy hive will be chasing that thing around and trying to get rid of it. They want it out. In the bottom left, you see that there's one of them that's in a cell. That's a bee larva that's getting ready. They're getting ready to cap to cover that cell so it can finish growing. And that's where those varroa mites get in, and so they'll grow inside of there. And while they're in there and that bee is developing, that varroa mite will be able to reproduce on its own and more. So once that cell opens up, that new bee will come out with at least one of these mites on it and a host more come out. And so you can see how that could go, and it just destroys. And remember, I talked to you guys about how I always look at the health of the hive and I look at bees, and that one that's on the upright, they call that deformed wing virus. And that's as a result of varroa mites. And you see that bee comes out, its wings are all shriveled and everything. That bee will wander around until the hive gets tired of it and kicks it out to die. It'll wander around begging for food, and some worker bee might take pity on it. But for the most part, bees are very efficient, and they're not going to waste their time or energy on something that's not going to do anything for them. But this is a sign of a real unhealthy hive. So I have a role, I have a job as a beekeeper. And one of the things I do, you know, this particular hive, I went in and I looked and I saw these bees are starving to death. Those pictures I had of those mites and the wax moths, they weren't in this hive yet. So I've got a window here where I can try to do something. And so one of the first things I got to do is I could give them some food. And ideally, I'd give them honey. But I didn't have any honey readily available. I have honey, but I got to do some stuff to process it. So the other option to do is we give them sugar water. And so you see here that I take one of their empty frames and I'm pouring sugar water on it and shaking it around and filling each one of those. And that's what you see also on the right side. I use a QT cup there. And then the other thing I do is I take a mason jar and I fill it with this sugar water, this syrup. And on the top of my hive box, the lid, I've got a hole cut in it. And so in the lid of that mason jar, I'll pop a couple of holes so it'll constantly drip. Flip it upside down, and so all day, all night, those bees will be up there. They'll be taking that sugar water out, and they'll go. And so I started doing this with this hive when I first discovered that they were starving last week. And I thought, I'll see what they're like in a week. See what they're like in a week. And I went yesterday, and they'd sucked down all of this mason jar, which is a pretty good amount. If you figure the size of a bee, it's quite a bit of food for them. They'd sucked it all down, and I got in there, and that hive was no better. No better. There was that little stunted queen. She was wandering around in there, and my job is to find her and take her and squish her and replace her and all that. She was pretty quick, though. I missed her. I'll get her next time. But this hive is in bad, bad shape. And there's things that I can do, and I can try to make a change with this hive, and that's part of what I do. So let's get to some more serious stuff here. There is a role of a beekeeper. When I first started keeping bees, we went to the bee festival that's run by Arizona Backyard Beekeepers, And they do it every year. It's actually pretty cool. And this last time, it was a couple months, or maybe in November, and they did it over here at PVCC. If you get a chance, it's pretty fascinating. But there was a guy there who's this kind of master beekeeper, and he was doing a class, and I sat through his class. And the first thing he says, you know, if you want to keep bees, he says, you need to make this decision if you want to be a beekeeper or a bee owner. He said, because those are two different things. And I thought, he's kind of an eccentric guy and weird looking, and I've been to his house, and he's a weird hoarder and all that. He's just a strange guy. And I'm like, this guy's a whack job. What does he mean by this? And he said, you know, a beekeeper, someone who keeps them, is aware of what's going on. They take time to get to know their hive. And he's saying all this, and I'm like, dude, this guy's just weird. Get to know your hive, you know? And so, you get to know your hive. You get to know the temperament, and you know what they like to do, and you know who they are. He says, a bee owner just has them. They just have them. And maybe they use, you know, they go in there from time to time, but a beekeeper is diligent, goes in there and takes a look at them, and is thinking about, you know, what do I need to do for them, and how do I need to take care of them. Rebecca will be able to tell you this for sure. When I go and I check my beehives and there's a problem with one, I spend a day or two worrying about it. And it's stupid. They're insects. But because I'm a beekeeper. I have the second point, is beekeepers hate flow hives. Everybody who wants to talk to me about bees, and I get tons of people, they're like, have you seen those flow hives? Has everybody seen those flow hives? Have you seen anything about it? They develop this beehive, and they make it look all pretty, make it look like a house and all that. And the frames, right, that you go in, they've made these special frames. And so the bees will fill it with honey, and from the outside, you have this little key that goes in, and you crank it, and it takes that frame and it does this. And then the honey that's in it automatically flows out. So they're like, hey, you don't even have to get into your hive. You can just harvest honey. And it's the newest, coolest thing, and everybody likes them and all that. And beekeepers hate them. I hate them because, and any real beekeeper hates them. And the reason why is because it's not supposed to be easy. And you keeping this particular hive isn't just so that you can get what you want when you want. One of the reasons why bees die so much the most bees that die other than varroa mites, they starve to death. And why do they do that? Because the people who own them take from them and take from them and take from them. You know, and the honey that we take, you know, the honey that you guys get from me and all that, I'm taking food from my bees. And the flow hive makes it so that you don't have to go in and look at the health of your hive and say, do they have more? Can I take some? Will it not affect them? You know, when I go through and I take honey from my hives, I don't ever take one whole box. I go through and I look and I say, okay, this is extra. I'm going to take just this amount. So I always leave them with some food. A beekeeper has a vision for their hives. Those small hives that I had, those nuke boxes, I have a vision for them. I want that. I keep it small because I want to see how productive that little queen is in there. And then I'm going to take her and I'm going to put her in a larger one, and then I'm going to begin to split her into pieces, her progeny, her progenitors, everything that goes after them. I'm going to split them into pieces if she's a productive one. I'm going to give her a small amount, a small box to prove herself to me. This hive that I'm working on right now that we're talking about today, I have a vision for it. I will not, if I can save this hive, I will not take anything from it this year. I can't. They're going to spend this whole year trying to catch back up again. And so I have a vision for it. I go into my hives and I look, and I know which of my queens are a little bit older, and I know, well, I'm going to have to squish her at some point and put in another one so that I control what the temperament and everything is of that hive. So a beekeeper has to have a vision. My job as a beekeeper is I'm supposed to facilitate the health and the temperament and the growth and the productivity of a hive. And, you know, that health, I'm talking about the temperament. You know, people call me all the time, there's swarms and stuff. And you look at this picture here, one of my friends had a friend, and they had a beehive that established in the floor of their shed. Could you come help us? Sure. So I went there, and you see that big thing, I'm cutting out the floor of the shed and pulling it out, and there's just huge hives. And I told her, said, well, we'll take this hive, but I'm telling you, the temperament's going to be bad. These are very aggressive, and you're going to have a bad-tempered hive. And so we're going to have to put a new queen in there. These are Africanized. I actually have got several pictures. I went to their house several times and did this. And coincidentally enough, they always had Africanized bees there because they didn't do what I asked them to. So this is part of my responsibility, and I'm involved in every hive, so I try to fix a sick hive. And so I want you to think about that, because I have a role. And so my sermon's entitled The Role of a Master. And I want to talk about a handful of these things. And as I'm going through all of this, in the next probably 15 minutes, I hope to finish here. But I want to make this statement, that I'm not saying as a church or as a local we're sick, we're damaged, anything like that. I just want you to think about this in terms of your life, in terms of your family, all of that sort of stuff. You know, we go through these ebbs and flows in life, times of good times and bad times. Spiritually, sometimes we're very productive, we're growing, and you know, sometimes we come to difficult times. We come to this spiritual winter, and you know, and sometimes we have sickness comes into us. And you know, just like for me, as I'm taking care of my bees, I have a responsibility. Well, you know, God also takes on Himself a responsibility for you. And so we're just going to go through these real quick, and I'm going to start. You know, I had listed in this previous slide some of my roles, some of my responsibilities. And so in conjunction with those, the Lord has very similar responsibilities. And so I'm going to read in John chapter 10, starting in verse 1. Christ says, I say unto you that he that entereth not by the door unto the sheepfold, but cometh some other way, the same as a thief and a robber. He that entereth in by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the porter openeth, and the sheep hear his voice, and calleth his own sheep by name, and leadeth them out. There's no way to substantiate this, I think, scientifically, but I'll tell you that my beehives know me. These bees are constantly dying. They're constantly dying, but they know me. They know who I am. They know, and it's probably the way that I handle them and my temperament and, you know, how I control my breathing and things like that, because they key in on CO2, which is why they attack your face. And if you're freaking out and you're breathing heavy, they're going to come at your face more, stuff like that. I mean, they know me. My bees know me. And Christ says, my sheep, they know me. When he putteth forth his own sheep, he goeth before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. And the stranger will they not follow, and will flee from him, for they know not the voice of strangers. In this parable spake Jesus unto them, and they understood not the things which he spoke unto them. Then Jesus said unto them again, verily I say unto you, I am the door of the sheep. All that ever came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. If any man enter in, he shall be saved, and go in and out and find pasture. The thief cometh not, but to steal and kill and destroy. I am come that they might have life, and they might have it more abundantly. I'm the good shepherd. The good shepherd giveth his life for the sheep. He that's a hireling and not a shepherd, whose own the sheep are not, seeth the wolf coming, and leaveth the sheep, and fleeth. And the wolf catcheth them, and scattereth the sheep. The hireling fleeth, because he is a hireling, and careth not for the sheep. I'm the good shepherd. I know my sheep, and I know none of mine. And the Father knoweth me, even as I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. And other sheep I have, which are not of this fold, and them also must I bring, and they shall hear my voice, and there shall be one fold and one shepherd. You know, that first point I told you is that, you know, I am a beekeeper, not a bee owner. And Christ says, I'm not just someone who, you know, Christ says, you're not just some possessions of mine. You're not just people. He says, you're personal to me. I know you. I assume that for sheep to know the voice of their shepherd, he's got to talk to them a lot. You know, you have a mute shepherd, and they're not going to know a voice. Or the sheep aren't going to know that. He's got to be talking to them for them to know him. You know, my chickens, I talk to them all the time. My chickens know my voice. I step out, and I speak, and they know that. There's a noise I make when I want them to come over and do something. I make that, and they know what it is. And I don't think it would work for my other kids, because they know my voice. They know my sound. And, you know, my bees know me. And Christ says, I know you. I know you. And he makes this statement. He says, my job, my role is that you have life and that you have it more abundantly. This is my role, is to give you abundant life. And he's talking, I think he means here on earth, and that's not riches or anything. It's a life that is able to be valuable to those around and valuable to God. And that doesn't require money or status or anything. It requires the intercession of God. He says, I'm here that you have life, and that you have it more abundantly to look forward to. And so this is one of these roles of Christ. I'm going to go to Ether chapter 1. And I'm going to read verses 107 and 108. the Lord's speaking to Moroni, and he says, I am the same that leadeth all men to good. He that will not believe my words will not believe me that I am. And he that will not believe me will not believe the Father which sent me. For behold, I am the Father, and the light, and the life, and the truth of the world. And he goes on to call people to him. But he says, you know, my job is to lead you to good. He says, that's my role. That's what I'm here for. That's why I'm invested in you as my sheep, because I want to lead you to good. And, you know, this is the role of the master. In 3 Nephi chapter 4, 44 through 47, behold, I'm Jesus Christ, the Son of God. I created the heavens and the earth and all things that in them are. I was with the Father from the beginning. I'm in the Father and the Father in me. And in me hath the Father glorified his name. I came to my own and my own received them not. The scriptures concerning my coming are fulfilled. And as many as have received me, to them I have given to become the sons of God. Even so I will to as many as shall believe on my name. For behold, by me redemption cometh, and in me is the law of Moses fulfilled. I can tell you right now that if this beehive that I'm talking about sillily today, if they will receive the efforts that I'm making, they will live. I won't let them die. I don't want to see them die. I've invested an awful lot in them. They're valuable to me. And if they will receive me. And this is what Christ is saying. If you'll receive me, I have tremendous blessing in store for you. In Alma chapter 18, I'll just read verses 11 and 12. And now, my son, I've told you this that you might learn wisdom, that you might learn of the Father. There's no other way nor means whereby man can be saved, only in and through Christ. Behold, he's the life and the light of the world. Behold, he is the word of truth and righteousness. There's something, I believe, that is put within us. I think God put a little speck of this within us. I've told you guys this before, that a good portion of my life, most of my life, and especially all of my professional careers, there's been a common theme in a lot of it, and it's death. And I've been with a lot of people when they've died. And talked to a lot of people who have been present when family members and all that die and all that. You know, I sent out an email the other day, you know, my good friend and coworker, his wife passed away, and visited with him. You know, there's something about when we get down to the root of humanity, and when we begin to look at life in its simplicity, that it lasts for a while and it goes, there's something within us that wants to recognize that there is a creator, a maker, something beyond. And, you know, Alma is telling his son, I want you to be wise and realize that there is an eternity, and there's only one way that you can enjoy this good through eternity. And it's through Jesus Christ. You know, this problem, this job that I have as a beekeeper of looking at, assessing a hive, and if they're sick, trying to fix that, you know, that's what these last three scriptures are about. The solving of problems and healing of scriptures, the solution to our own nature is through Christ and through his word. There's no way around it. There's no way around it. And there's so many people and times you've seen it in your life, and maybe you've felt it in your life. You know, when you've done the things the Lord has asked you to do, circumstances, situations, health, whatever it is, ended out better. And when you went the opposite way, well, you ended up worse and sick. And, you know, this is the truth of God, and his role is that he presents all these things in front of you. I'm going to read 2 Peter chapter 1. Verses 1 through 10. And believe it or not, I only have a couple more scriptures and I'm going to be done. 2 Peter and 1. And Peter says, wherefore the rather, brethren, give diligence to make your calling and election sure. For if you do these things, you shall never fall. For so an entrance shall be ministered unto you abundantly in the everlasting kingdom of the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. You know, one of these things, as you saw, and I said, you know, so these are some of my responsibilities as I've taken on this silly hobby of taking care of bees, is to have a vision. And, you know, Peter is telling the people, he says, you know, Christ has a vision for you. He's got a vision for you. He wants you to make your calling and your election sure, who you are and what you stand for. He says, and if you If you make sure that you are serving the Lord, that you are following after your commitments and all, he says, he has a plan and a vision for you eternally. This is the role of the master, is to not only have a plan, but tell you what it is. So John chapter 15, I'll read verse 5 and verse 8. And Christ, he's making this statement, where he's talking about being the vine, and the Father is the husband and all these things, and that you can be a part of this. And so he says, I'm the vine, you are the branches. He that abideth in me and I in him, the same bringeth forth much fruit. For without me you can do nothing. And verse 8, he says, herein is my Father glorified, that you bear much fruit. So shall you be my disciples. You know, one of these things that my responsibility is I want the things that I put my time and energy into to be productive. Many years ago, I felt, I was praying about it, and this sounds really silly, but I believe it's the truth. It's praying about, Lord, what can I do that I can be a blessing to people around me? I mean, I can just something I can do, because especially when I left the police department, we received so much love and support, and I thought, what can I do? Is there something I can do beyond, hey, I can come trim your trees and all that? And I prayed about it, and the Lord told me that I should start keeping bees. Sounds really dumb. I've been able to be a real blessing with honey. Everybody likes it. It's great, And it's been a way that I can give something. And it takes effort, and I get stung a lot. I sweat, and, I was in my bee suit yesterday and getting ready for bed, and I'm like, oh, I didn't take a shower yet. I forgot, but I stink, It's sweaty. It's uncomfortable. I do it because there's productivity. And, the Christ says, if you will be a part of me and abide in me and my word and all that, there will be fruit. I will bring you to make fruit. So we'll go to Titus here real quick. And in Titus, it makes this statement here, and it's talking about the role of Christ's people, and that there's a job that you guys have, every one of you. Speak those things which become sound doctrine. The aged men, that they be sober, grave, temperate, sound in faith and charity and patience. The aged women likewise, that they be in behavior as becometh holiness, not false accusers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things, that they may teach young women to be sober and love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, keepers at home, obedient to their husbands, that the word of God be not blasphemed. Young men, likewise, exhort to be sober-minded in all things. Show thyself to be a pattern of good works. And all this, the Lord's saying that every one of you have a role to be productive, a productivity that he wants from each one of you. This scripture in 1 Corinthians, I'm not going to read that, but it talks about how everybody is a part of a body and every piece has a role, an important thing. And, when I go in and I look in one of my beehives, I look to make sure that everything that is present there is filling a role. If there's space that is unused, my job is to either make it usable or get rid of it. If there is a hive that is unproductive, or that there is a hive that's aggressive and angry, my job is to fix that, because it's got a role. I have and the Lord, this is what he's looking for. His role is to encourage everyone to be effective in what you're doing here, in your participation in the church, in your participation in your family, in your participation at work. His role is to encourage you. To encourage you. 3 Nephi chapter 12. Verse 22. Christ is talking to people. He says, if it so be that the church is built upon my gospel, then will the Father show his works in it. A healthy hive shows that it's healthy because it produces something. And that's kind of an interesting thing to think about. What is your measure for if you are being effective in your commitment and your role as a member of the Church of Christ? What does that look like to you? I judge the value of all things I do based on things I put my time into. What value does it bring to the people around me? What value does it bring to the town I work for? What value does it bring to my coworkers, to my family and all that? What value does my attendance and my participation in the Church of Christ bring? What does it look like? How do I measure that? Christ says that if it's my church built upon my gospel, his works are going to be present, and I would say that's the same with every one of us. That if we are built upon Christ's gospel, if he's working in and moving, then we're going to see those things that are indicative of it. And it's just something that I think that we need to think about. John chapter 10, verse 14. And we already read this, but it says, I'm the good shepherd, and know my sheep, and am known of mine. And I already said this, you know, my beehives, most of them, they know me. And I know them. And I know which one of them. As I go, I can tell you, I have a hive. If you go into Uncle Jim's backyard, and it's the farthest one I have, close to the boat that's got some wild swarm in it that I have to take care of one of these days. That hive doesn't like to build. They don't like any of the frames that are on the far left side of their hive, those three. It doesn't matter what. They won't touch them. They don't like them. They will, and so what I'll do is I'll take those three frames out, I'll take the rest of them, I'll scooch them over, and I'll put those frames on the right, and these ones that are all the way over there, they'll ignore. They don't like it. I don't know why. There's something strange about it. But I know that when I go in there. I know that, you know, years ago I had a hive, I called it my hippie hive, and they just built crazy all over the place. I knew every time I got in there that they're going to get ticked because I'm going to have to cut stuff because they're going to build all over the place. You know, I know it. And Christ knows us. He knows us. It's his job to know us. But what does that mean? There are things that a beekeeper cannot control. I can't make this hive do anything. I can do everything that's in my responsibility, that this responsibility I took on myself, and provide everything. And yet I can't control what this particular hive chooses to do. This hive has chosen to starve to death. That's their choice. I'm going to try to do this quickly because I know I'm kind of hitting my hour here. But there's a progression of bees, okay? When they're born, when they come out of that cell, they wander around for a day or so, and they're just being fed, and they're kind of recouping and gaining some strength and drying off and strengthening their wings and all that sort of stuff. And they're just kind of wandering around in their, you know, kind of toddler phase doing that sort of stuff. Then they go out of the hive, and they spend about a day learning their surroundings. And so you'll see it because all of these eggs, typically all of these, they kind of hatch at the same time. And so you'll see out in front of a hive, and I know, if you're not a beekeeper, you wouldn't know, but when a bee comes, and even with me, and it's zipping around and it's doing this, it's trying to figure out what I am. It doesn't want to hurt me. It's trying to figure out what I am. It's when they're going really fast and zipping. That's when they want to hurt you. But you'll see this as these bees, a couple days into their life, they'll come out, and you'll see a bunch of them will come out at once. And then they're just doing this around the front of the hive. And they're learning what their hive looks like. They're learning what it looks like. They're learning what it smells like. They're learning what the surroundings are like so that they can find their way home. So once they do that, I can take those bees and I can take them all the way over to the 51 and let them go, and they'll know how to get right home. Okay? After they do that, they go back in the hive, and then for the majority of their life, they're going to take care of babies. It'll be nurse bees. And then once they get past this certain progression, the last portion of their life, they're going to be forager bees, and then they're going to go out and they're going to collect nectar or pollen and do all that stuff at the last part of their life. And then at that very last part of their life, you'll see them come in and they'll be dark. They'll be very dark. They won't have any fuzz left on them. Their wings will be a little chewed up and all that. And they'll hang out and they'll be there kind of to keep the colony warm a little bit for a couple of days, and then they're going to leave and die. Or they're going to die there and another one's going to drag them out. That's the other thing, is when they get old, they can be grave keepers and they're pulling out dead bees. There's a progression to their life. If you look at this hive, there is thousands upon thousands of bees there, and every one of them capable of flying out to these orange trees and getting nectar and coming back in and feeding them. But they've chosen instead to die. Why? We're not old enough to do that yet. I haven't come to my age yet where I'm at the last part. My job right now is to take care of babies. There's no babies in this hive, but they don't know what to do. They could flip a switch and say, well, we'll just go out and feed ourselves. But instead, they've chosen to die. And they will slowly but surely starve to death, and there'll be nothing there. Not because they don't have the ability to do something different, but because they've chosen it. I mean, of course, nature has put it in there and all that, but you see what I'm saying, spiritually. You see what I'm saying? 1 Nephi chapter 5, verse 59. If it so be that the children of men keep the commandments of God, if it so be the children of men keep the commandments of God, he doth nourish them and strengthen them and provide ways and means whereby they can accomplish the thing which he hath commanded them. This hive of mine doesn't have to die. I'd say at this point it's probably, I probably have a 25% chance of saving it. Probably not going to make it, or if it does, a bulk of them are going to die off again before I can establish a new group in there. This group of bees that was so incredibly productive and that were strong and went through a time of trouble and came out of it worse and have decided to lay down and die. But here the Lord says, my job, I will do all these things for you if you choose. If you choose. And, you know, I hope that you don't take what I'm saying here as an accusation, because I've yet to preach a sermon that hasn't been for me. And, you know, it's all you know, my life has been pretty busy lately. Pretty busy. I don't have days off anymore. If I have some time, I'm doing homework. I'm studying. I'm in like 5 classes right now, to include the paramedic school I'm going. I don't have a lot of time. I've struggled because of everything I have to be intentional to make sure I'm being fed. It's not that I'm not, but I'm not prioritizing it like I really need to be. There's a lot of stuff going on right now, and you know, at work I have a lot of people who are coming to me and a lot of problems and a lot of things that, man, I really need to be on the ball as a minister. Deuteronomy chapter 30, I'm not going to read all of this, but this is such a good thing, because the Lord, he tells his people, he says, this commandment which I command thee this day, it's not hidden from thee, neither is it far off. It's not in heaven, that thou should say, who shall go up for us to heaven and bring it to us, that we might hear it and do it. Neither is it beyond the sea, that thou should say, who shall go over the sea for us and bring it to us, that we might hear it. But the word is very nigh unto thee, in thy mouth and in thy heart, that thou mayest do it. So he says, all these things I'm going to tell you, there's no secret. It's not hidden. So I'm going to tell you plainly. And he goes on to say, God wants to be present in your life. He wants to work with you. His promise is he'll strengthen you and guide you and do all those things. It is in your book. It's in your control. It's up to you. And he makes a statement near the end. He says, choose it. Choose life. Choose love. Choose God. And he'll do all these good things for you. And so, those are my thoughts for today. I'm going to do one more thing before we close. But those are my thoughts today, and I hope that maybe you guys are so patient with me with all the weird things I come and preach about and stuff like that. And but as I was going through and doing, you know, taking care of on my one or two days off, taking care of some of these things that I've chosen to have responsibility over, man, I was looking at my beehives, and I thought, there is a lesson in this that I need to think about, that I'm not considering enough. And so that's my message this morning. I'm going to teach you guys a song for the end of my sermon here. And it doesn't have anything necessarily to do with what I'm preaching about directly, although as I was thinking about that, I remember years and years ago that, it must have been 20-something years ago, I had a song I was going to sing for a sermon, and Granddad was preaching. And I told him, I'm going to sing a special. And I said, but I guarantee it's got nothing to do with what you're going to preach, because I knew what Grandpa was going to preach about. And Granddad says, I can make anything work to match in with my sermon. And I thought, if there's one person who can do that, it's Granddad. But this song doesn't necessarily have to do with my sermon, but it's a song that's been on my heart lately that I've been listening to, and singing as I'm going about my busy, busy days. And I think especially when I'm feeling overwhelmed, I've learned in my life the best thing I can do is to remember to be thankful and look at what the Lord's done in belief that if he's done it before, he'll do it again. He can do it again. There's no reason for him not to unless I've decided to walk away from him. And so this is a song that I think is kind of about that. So I don't know how many of you guys know this song, probably only my family. I'm going to turn off this mic, Logan, and if you want to. So this song is called Counting My Blessings, and I'll teach you the chorus. There is on the left side, the right side, sorry. And so what I'll do is I'll teach you how the chorus goes, and then we'll sing it, and you can just follow me. Zane knows it. We've been singing it a bunch at my house. So the chorus goes like this. God, I'm still counting my blessings. For all that you've done in my life, the more that I look in the details, the more of your goodness I find. Father, on this side of heaven, I know that I'd run out of time, but I will keep counting my blessings, knowing I can't count that high. So I'll start. It's like it was yesterday. I was praying for a miracle, scared to have a little hope. But looking back today and seeing all the things you've done, and I can't even add them up. 1, 2, 3, up to infinity. I'm all out of numbers before I could thank you for everything. Oops. God, I'm still counting my blessings for all that you've done in my life. The more that I look in the details, the more of your goodness I find. Father, on this side of heaven, I know that I'd run out of time, but I will keep counting my blessings. Oh, and I can't count that high. And I know that seasons, they never last forever. So God, I will remember all of the reasons. My heart has to be grateful, all the times you've been faithful to me. God, I'm still counting my blessings for all that you've done in my life. The more that I look in the details, the more of your goodness I find. Father, on this side of heaven, I know that I'd run out of time, but I will keep counting my blessings, knowing I can't count that high. 1, 2, 3. Up to infinity. I've run out of numbers before I could thank you for everything. God, I'm still counting my blessings for all that you've done in my life. The more that I look in the details, the more of your goodness I find. Father, on this side of heaven, know that I'd run out of time, but I will keep counting my blessings, knowing I can't count that high. Thank you, guys.